Yo, what up, though? This is Esham, and you rocking with the Connected Experience.
Yo, what up, though, man? This is Big Greg, and you rocking with the Connected Experience.
This is Premium P, and you're rocking with the Connected Experience.
Chill. Oh, yeah, this is Jake Prince coming at you live and in living color, and you rocking with the Connect Experience.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It's comedian TK Kirkland, a.k.a. T to the motherfucking K. And when I'm in Detroit, you already know what it is. I listen to the Connected Experience. You should, too.
Connected.
I'm Santuan.
I'm Antoine.
And we the Connected Experience.
Bro, what's the Connected Experience?
It's a lifestyle.
Our lifestyle.
The lifestyle.
How that lifestyle been treating you?
Man, I can't complain, man. I'm just watching everything take place that I write down every day. So I'm actually living in it for the moment. You know what I'm saying? Not thinking about yesterday or tomorrow.
Do you write it on a whiteboard or a paper?
I write it on paper. I got to write it every single day.
Yeah, yeah. You know I write certain stuff on a whiteboard, like...
I don't like the whiteboard concept.
Well, it depends, right? So the stuff that what book was that? Anyway, I had read a book, and that stuff I wrote all the information that I wanted on the whiteboard, and I keep it to the right of my bed. So if I'm just laying in the bed, I could look at it. Certain stuff I write on paper because I want to make sure that I complete these things, and then I go back or I might find it later and be like, oh yeah, let me check that off.
So my handwriting is immaculate as well, so I just
what that got to do with anything?
That's why, because I write every day, so my handwriting
is immaculate. Like, you can't be the judge of that. You got to give it to somebody to read.
Okay, I'll show it to you. I take a picture of it.
We're gonna take a poll. We ask three people because I might be able to read it, and two other people might be like, "What is this chicken scratch?" I write every day too, and it is chicken scratch.
What's in your title?
Juvenile man, 400 degrees. I had to replay it, man. I mean, you just can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, you feel what I'm saying? Yeah.
You just cannot. What about you? What's in your title?
Notice, Life After Death. I had to revisit that because I remember being 10 years old.
Yeah.
And that being my favorite album, and I wanted to listen to it again. But I also wanted to mention, so last week, I'm watching the 1995 Source Awards on YouTube, and Shelby watching it with me, and she's seeing how geeked I got when DJ Quick came out for his set on the Death Row set. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then she was like,
Was it a surprise? Like, ain't nobody know he was gonna beat her?
No, definitely didn't.
Yeah.
So she was like, well, why you get so amped? You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, well, this is one of the best diss records ever. So she was like, well, what's a diss record? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I get to explain to her what a diss record is, and I play her my two favorites, which is No Vaseline and Hit 'Em Up. Bro, she listens to Hit 'Em Up every day after that.
The clean version?
No, she called Kiwana today and asked her if she know about Hit 'Em Up and No Vaseline, dog.
That sound crazy. What did Kiwana say? They start rapping it together?
I wasn't paying attention to that conversation, but I know she called her and asked her, dog. Yeah. So that was a proud dad moment.
Yeah, don't have her corrupting my kids, man.
For sure. I mean, but it's different. It's different because she's an only child, so she growing up a little faster.
She growing up corrupt. I just don't bring...
All right. So she can't, your kids don't listen to...
No, cuss rap around me.
Yeah,
I ain't playing the cussing version of Hit 'Em Up. The first words is just too ridiculous that you would have to dive deeper.
She said it sounded like he was mad at Biggie.
It got to.
Yeah.
So we got a guest.
We got a guest, man. So
what's going on, man?
Not too much, gents. How y'all doing,
man? Oh, we doing great, man. You got your lens. What lens is that?
This is actually a coffee cup, bro.
Oh, that looks like a lens. That's dope. You got me.
You ain't the only one that say that when they see that. So introduce yourself, bro.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, James D. Anderson. Go by JD. I'm super excited to be here with the good brothers, SJ and AJ.
Thank you guys for definitely having me on.
The Connected Experience.
We appreciate that, man. We obviously be in the same circles. We see each other a lot.
Yeah,
and it's just a pleasure to have you, man, and really get on here and talk about your extensive knowledge with these cameras and with this digital media and everything, because that's how we actually see you. Because if we have an event, you come out with Jay and you taping, and even when he kind of first started taping in here, you would be in here
making sure everything was correct.
So how did you get into that, into cameras and everything like that?
So really, man, it started back in like high school. Nothing formal in high school, but I was the kid with the camcorder. You remember the camcorders used to come with the like the 5-inch cassettes that you could put in the handy cams, you know?
Got one of those.
So I would always be like the guy with the camcorder, and I would be like recording people jitting at the games, at the pet rallies.
What high school did you attend?
I went to a cast, and I graduated from Ford, so I did two on each one.
Okay.
Why you switch?
Oh, I messed up. I didn't go to school.
Because people don't understand, you could get put out of Cash Tag, right?
Yeah, I was smart.
Yeah,
but skipping.
Yeah.
So downtown, you know, doing what you do.
Right.
That's all that it was. So from my parents' standpoint, they were like, "You smarter than that." So when I went to Ford, it was like I just got 3.5s, 3.8s, and then I started skipping again, and I graduated in summer school.
Yeah.
And I had to test out of like two classes, and then I got like a 4.0 in summer school, and they were like, "Why are you wasting everybody's time?"
Yeah, like what you're doing. All right, so how was growing up in the city? Because you're the oldest of four, right?
Yeah, oldest is four. So two sisters from my mama, two brothers from my dad. Never considered them like half siblings or nothing like that. Yeah. They're always just my brothers.
Yeah, that's how we are too. I feel like that's kind of like a downgrade. I'm dissing you if I say to somebody, "That's my half sister." No, this is my sister.
Yeah,
this is my brother. How we related really don't matter to you. You know what
for
I'm saying?
For sure. And that's just how like I always looked at it as. So I always say I'm the oldest of five total. Got four siblings. And for me, man, I grew up on, you know, I grew up where the rest of the homies grew up. I grew up on Dre Road. You know what I'm saying? I was always younger. Like you mentioned, Jay and all of them, I was always younger than them. So I was a little homie. So when they were in high school, I was in middle school.
Yeah.
Right. So them guys are in their 40s. I'm 38 now. So they got about 3 to 4 years on average on me.
Yeah.
So I would kind of tag along with them and stuff like that, being around the block and stuff. And when we got older, just a sidebar, when we got older, you know, ain't really no difference in age when you 35 to 32, 31.
Once everybody in their 30s, it's over.
So, but a lot of people don't know that I was kind of a little bit younger. So I was the little homie in the neighborhood, things like that. I mean, growing up over there is like what everybody says. There's a lot of stuff that you've seen.
Yeah.
And the choice was whether or not you fed off into it.
Yeah. Right, right.
You got into the BS or the garbage and stuff, or you kind of stayed focused up. Now, we all got into stuff, but
The extensiveness of what you got into was
and
up to
the choices
you.
If you go stay in this.
Exactly.
I think it's two choices when we grow up in the communities we grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you gonna get involved? And then once you involved, are you gonna stay involved?
Yeah.
And I think learning from other people is the best way to navigate those situations because we also in our 40s. So when you start looking and you coming up and you say, okay, now I went to junior high with, let's say, 12 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, out of these 12 people, two of them did, four of them shot, two more in jail,
mm-hmm.
and it's the rest. And it's like, I can stop right now because I see I see firsthand. Right.
And it's okay for somebody to say, nah, man, I don't want to be into that type of lifestyle, because the misconception be where when you come from where these inner cities or these urban environments, that if you not from the streets, if you not with criminal activity. But bro, we all grew up in the same projects right next to each other.
Exactly.
You just are a criminal. I'm not. We're both still from the same street. We actually live next door to each other.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the interesting part about it. One thing that I can say, at least from the immediate neighborhood, like in particularly like Plainview Field and like all that area right over in that little pocket right around Evergreen, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like looked down upon if you didn't want to really get involved. Like, to be honest, like Jade and all of them guys are like still my good friends to this day. We still interact on a friendship level, on a brotherhood level, and on a business level. And it was never looked down upon like if you didn't want to get involved.
Yeah.
It was just kind of cool. You was either with it or you wasn't with it.
Yeah.
But one thing I can say I was blessed about, and I was thinking, this is a good question because I was thinking about this the other day, is a lot of the individuals that came out were also right alongside. A lot of them changed their ways.
Yeah.
Some people stayed back and they still got stuck in their ways. But it was never the peer pressure of like, you got to do this or you not down with the hood.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't experience that. Now, I don't know. Maybe it was just the culture at the time.
Yeah.
Maybe people saw things differently. And
It
wasn't, you know, you had people that was on the block doing what they do, but they never, like, tried to coerce you into doing it.
Right.
Everybody just kind of lived their life and did what they had to do. And you're right. You can look back out there and see that, you know, individuals that got locked up, individuals that did time, individuals that made mistakes, individuals that got sent off. That was a big thing, you know, in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
You were getting into trouble. You know, your mama or your daddy would send you down with your uncles or granddad.
Somebody down south.
Yeah. Exactly, you know. And
go raise these live animals if you want to be around some live stuff.
Exactly. I think the only thing that we were probably had our nose too open to was females, yeah, right? You know, that was about it.
But that's going to be wherever you
you know. But it was no other, like, I mean, it was no peer pressure to get involved in any of that stuff. If you were a school kid, you were a school kid. If you're a church kid, you're a church kid. If you like art, you like art. If you hooped, you hooped. You ran, you ran. Yeah. Like,
I think the mix of people being able to be individually who they want to be and then still be from a certain neighborhood or stuff, that's what make the neighborhood strong. It's like a high school. No, let's say college. It's like a college, right? All while you coming up, you want to be from this college. But you really want to do something so phenomenal that the college say he went here.
Exactly.
So you should go here. So that's why we got so much pride with being from Inkster. And it's like, oh, no, like you can think of the most gangster person you want from Inkster, but none of them iller than Don Barton, because he really surpassed every businessman you could think of. Right. And that's just business. And then you think about the first person who performed open heart surgery in Michigan. He from Inkster. At one time, the commissioner of hockey.
Yeah.
Hockey Players Association or something.
Yep.
From Inkster. So it's like, nah, that's what you should want to be like. This is why I'm proud to be from Inkster. Because you can't exceed the level of certain things. Like, who going to be a better businessman than Don Barton?
Yep.
On a building downtown Las Vegas, a casino. Come on, man. That's what you aspire to. Because even if you try and be gangster, the gangster you try and be like didn't surpass heights of gangsterism, because you might go to Arizona and they'd be like, who is this? Exactly. who is this?
You're only relative to what you're surrounding, your environment, or what you're known for.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not many people that get that national recognition all the way around.
Right.
I think that's where a lot of the misconception be. And that was one of the motivations that kind of kept me out of that. I didn't want to be relegated to James from Warren and Evergreen or Jordan and Evergreen. I didn't want to be just that.
Right.
You know, although everybody know where I come from, I still.
And that wasn't because of you. Like, that's the big thing, too. Like, you're only from where your parents can afford to put you at.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely, yeah.
Like, people be like, well, I'm from here, I'm from there. If your situation was that bad where you from, you should be looking at your parents like, man, God damn, y'all wasn't on top of y'all shit. Because when you an adult, you can say that now. Like,
exactly.
Damn, like, we from the projects because what? Yeah, because your parents wasn't on top of their shit. And now you think that that's a badge of honor. No, man, that's like, now you got to come up even more. Like,
yeah, you're starting behind the eight ball. Yeah. And that's one thing that my father, he definitely instilled in me as being a young man, because he was always an entrepreneur. He was always in leadership. Even when he worked the job, he was still in leadership, you know.
Yeah.
It was all about how do you, you know, do the absolute best you can, legally, ethically, and morally.
Yeah.
And you can succeed.
Yeah.
If you're ethical about your ways, if you have some sense of morality, whether it's in capitalism, business, money, church, life, relationships, whatever, you'll be good to go.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you want to make sure that you're legal because,
right.
You know.
You don't want it all to crumble. You can
stop it all there. So he always instilled that, you know, no matter even what the area we were from, even when looking around like, yeah, this ain't right, you know, it was very clearly explained to me and my brothers why it wasn't right and why as a man you should not do this. And,
right.
And it was never in a scolding manner like, if you do that, I'm going to, you know.
Right, it's just, this is what it is.
This is the real life of what it is, you know.
Because that's the way I approach parenting with my daughter. I'm like, yo, I'm just going to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, not my truth, but the truth of the matter. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because if I sugarcoat it for you, you really going to be let down when you find out the truth. And, like, I don't want to be the one you looking at me like, you always knew. I'm like, nah, I always told you. Like,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And that shows your level of commitment to your children. Because you're preparing them more for what's
going to be. For the real world. Yeah, it's not a fairy tale.
Yeah, like, and that's what I was telling a partner.
That's why I let her listen to Hit 'Em Up with the cussing in it. You know what I'm saying?
That's
a great example.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
because
yeah.
You're not even going to feel it the same if you hear this.
Just telling a partner of mine yesterday. I said, listen, man, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Everything you could think of, the good, the bad, the ugly, it's gonna happen. So if you can prepare best for it, then you is it the blow, you soften the blow, right?
It might not even feel like a blow,
right? You know, because even if it's financial, right, no matter what, you go have financial ups and downs. Mm-hmm. Now my financial down might be more than somebody else's financial up, but this is a down for me. Yep. So I know that's gonna happen,
and they don't even know that because they haven't even experienced it, right? So you can only, like, when you say that, that's you comparing that to a level that somebody else might not even be comparing it to, because they haven't had the blessing of even having that up your down. So that's how I feel too, man. Like, it's all gonna happen. Like, if you just look at the newspapers and see what's going on, like, they just did a study saying how much you need to make to live comfortably individually and with a partner. Those numbers are crazy. Like, those numbers really don't exist in real life. Like, that's not going to happen with this generation and the model that they sold us. I'm not going to say they sold, that they marketed to us, and you bought into it at some point and then you got away from it. But that's all it is. It's just like marketing. So now they saying an individual need to make $90,000 a year to live comfortably. Mm-hmm. Well, how are you telling me what's comfortable to me? Mm-hmm. What are you basing that on? You know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. What are you?
And that's what I thought. That's so they know if you make $90,000, the amount of debt that they can.
Yeah, that's what that means.
That's how I looked at it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because I used to always say to my partner, I would rather have $10,000 cash and no bills than $50,000 cash with $40,000 worth of bills.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Because why? Right? Because we know you was big into the finance, because you mm-hmm. had the financial podcast too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but we'll get to that, because you actually end up after high school going to college. So what college did you go to?
I went to Lawrence Tech, man, right in Southfield.
So yeah, that's a black
that's
college,
a black
right?
college, right?
No, it's a mix.
No. It's a real HBCU.
No, yeah, it is classified.
Yeah, but
it's definitely not. So Lawrence Tech got a weird history.
Yeah.
Man, I don't want to smash my alma mater.
Tell the truth about it, man.
Because I always wonder how did that come about.
Well, the biggest thing, I'll say this, the biggest thing about LTU is it's a great, so there's a lot of, if you look at the pedigree of people that come out of there in the tech and business sector,
yeah,
it's very, it's star-studded, right? There's a lot of people in the industry that either took their master's, their graduate, undergraduate.
Somewhere they touched that.
They touched LTU. LTU, by being one of the, you know, a very top engineering and architectural school, being local to Detroit, it's always kind of like shun, because we're up against Michigan State,
Michigan,
U of M, Western,
the big Wayne boy, State, the big boy State. White
yeah,
schools.
Yeah, and here's the thing: like, those are state schools,
right?
We're still a private institution. It's still a private institution.
Yeah.
So typically, state schools are kind of looked at as like, you know, okay. So let me draw a correlation, right? You got like a, you know, say like a Rutgers or something like that, or you got like New York State or Syracuse or something like that. Like, state school is always looked at like that's junior college. Don't get upset. I'm not bashing anybody, because I do believe the education is what you take and what you make of it. But you know, state schools are typically cheaper versus private universities or private colleges in general. And it's funny, because in Michigan, because we're surrounded by Western, Eastern, Michigan State, U of M, Ohio State, if you want to throw them in there, Lawrence Tech is kind of looked at as the little bro, but really Lawrence Tech is kind of like the private specialized college that a lot of people who've made tremendous success have came out of. I mean, dude, I walked across the stage when I graduated in engineering. I walked across the stage with people that were designing algorithms for code and Python back in 2012. Like, these guys were way above their time. Most people that have come out of there has doing things in electrification now. They're doing things in
just super futuristic.
Man, we were way far out there. Like, for my senior project, we actually did forklifts and things like that have hour meters, right?
Okay.
So traditionally, if you got like a lot that rents construction equipment, you would have a guy that goes out there with a clipboard, and he would write down the hours that it ran, and then you match up your services to those particular hours. Well, what was our part of is that we actually digitized that and made an app for that to where you can literally walk out with an Android phone or Bluetooth. It'll suck in all the hours. It'll build into a macro, and it'll tell you, okay, forklift 40, machine Bobcat 32. You know, it'll tell you each one that needed service without you having to do that, and then you can allocate your resources to just service what need to have service instead of having to waste time to check every machine. That was like a requirement that you had to do to graduate. Like, we had to make a physical product, apply for a real patent, actually go out there and actually make something. And LTU always get looked at as like little bro. It's like, nah, they doing some cool shit over in their lab, you know?
Yeah. So, but how did it become a HBCU? Well, how did that happen?
Well, it's funding and stuff like that. And
they got sports and shit too, right? Because I think they just got a field or something. It's a lot so going. They opening back up, actually, or something. Yeah,
so they've always had like the hockey team and stuff like that. But it's a petition for a lot of
HBCU sports. If you know, if you feel what I'm saying,
they got the hockey team being HBCU, that's dangerous.
Yeah, a lot of people up there on scholarships that you would be looking at different, like, oh, he got a hockey scholarship. Then there's people like, oh, he going to an HBCU, but it's really Lawrence Tech and one of the best colleges that you could go to. So that's smart.
Yeah, that's smart. It's I hate to say it, it's a marketing thing.
Dude. Yeah, everything,
and that's what it is, dude. I've always been partial to this, and this is just the way I think about it. I think the foundation and things like that in universities should be shared, but I do believe that this is going to sound real liberal, and I mean, it's not me, but it's just in this regard. I do think that individuals should look at the curriculums and what's being offered and match it up per what the student can actually do and achieve. That's real soapboxy, but the reason why I say that is I hate when technical students go to colleges that specialize in literary.
Yeah.
And I hate when literary students try to come to Lawrence Tech and they ain't make it. They waste a lot of money.
Yeah. And just a quick FYI, HBCUs all were founded by white people for the most part. And those are white institution names. I mean, those are white last names that y'all thinking that when y'all hear certain stuff happen in the HBCUs, like, those white people schools too.
Hey, I don't want to hurt nobody's feelings. I let you say it because it's your platform, though. You know?
Yeah, but like just do a little bit of research.
Because I would think with any college, like especially when you legacy, some people might not even dove into why they going there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Some people just same thing with Harvard and Princeton. My great granddaddy went here. This is why I'm going here. This is a tradition. So some people might not even dove into it. But what made you pick engineering?
Just really my dad himself, he's always been into cars.
Yeah.
So at a young age, I was always around vehicles and things like that.
Yeah.
And my ideal thing was like, okay, I want to do something with vehicles.
You can wrench or nah?
Yeah, I wrench.
Yeah.
I still wrench. Well, not so much as I need to. And I try to stay on like my projects a lot. But yeah, I wrench. That was honestly the way how I paid through school, was wrenching on people's cars.
Oh, okay.
And I was, and then I softened the wrenching up a little bit because I got in trouble with doing stuff in parking lots. So I started doing like radios and alarms and sound systems and stuff like that, stuff a little bit, not so much under the hood, so I can be putting in somebody's 12s and stuff like that in the parking lot and
hood ain't open.
Yeah, you know, so, but I've always been around vehicles. My dad, like I say, he had automotive repair shops. He had a customizer shop. He's actually by trade, he's a master mechanic.
Okay.
So he's always kept me around that. You know, I was always hanging out with the shop with him. So cars was like second nature. So when I got older, I wanted to do something in cars. And my dad has always said this. He was like, you know, do something. He's like, you can wrench and stuff like that if you want to, you know, go be a master mechanic. But he's like, try to do something that maybe is a little bit above and beyond, maybe something like engineering or actually product development or making actual vehicles, you know?
Yeah.
And so my goal is that first when I started off, I went to Baker for their automotive program directly out of high school right before I went to Lawrence Tech. And I thought
what you
I
went to the Baker that's on that was off of 94?
No, I went to Owosso. Owosso, way up there. So, 30 miles past, like 40 miles past Flint, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And because they got, again, one of the better automotive programs there. They had a full lab and everything. Flint was pretty good, too. Baker College of Flint, they have
They was big on nursing, because I remember all the women used to go to that one.
So they, nursing and things like that was big there. They had a decent automotive program, but the one in Owosso, even if you was enrolled in Baker College of Flint, like as a student, you would have to take classes over at Owosso because that's where their expertise was at.
Right, so you was going to have to go up there anyway.
Exactly. So from there, I had this idea, right, that, okay, it's 2003 when I graduated high school. I'm going to go do an associate's in automotive design. And ultimately what I wanted to do was be like in the clay design studio. I wanted to be like modeling cars with clay. That was my idea of what it was. So, but all along the time, I was taking engineering courses along there because it was like be designer.
Yeah.
Then typically designers can go to be engineers. Engineers can then go on to be product engineers or manufacturing engineers. So, just to tell you, tie it all together, while doing that and getting my associate's degree and things like that, when I got everything pretty much set up, I got my first degree and the auto industry crashed.
Yeah.
So here you are with automotive knowledge,
right?
From home, all you know is cars, right? And now you went to school and got a degree with the word automotive on it. Automotive technology and design on it.
Right.
And boom.
And
The
industry gone. I didn't know really what to do. Right. So a little distraught. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to still go to school and I'm so knee deep in these engineering credits. Let me go in and finish that. And really what I was going to look into was like going to like locomotive or aerospace.
Yeah.
Right. Because I didn't want to touch the automotive industry. I couldn't even find an internship because Ford, GM, or Chrysler weren't hiring interns.
They was getting rid of people.
They were barely keeping people on board.
Right.
Then the bailout happened and nobody knew what was going to happen. What was going to happen. So I was going to go, the only industry that was pretty much still kind of moving was locomotive.
Yeah.
So I was going to flip to that. So I just said, okay, let me just do the generic mechanical engineering degree or mechanical engineering technology degree or robotics or something. And I can go anywhere. I'd do that. Take what I had now, to go to a larger university, right? Nobody wanted to take it.
And I hate that type of stuff too, man, because it's like, if you offer this type of degree, I know that some of these credits match up with some type of class that y'all have.
I think that should be illegal.
I do too.
Yeah, I think that should be illegal.
Because it's like, I got the knowledge. You really just want my money and push me back. Yeah. So I think, with the college education system, that's my biggest turnoff.
Yeah, this should be transferable anywhere that you can open a book at.
And
go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's what I was saying. Like, because I got a niece right now. She go to Eastern, and my wife graduated from Eastern, and she was telling my wife, like, I don't want to go to Eastern no more. And we looked like, no, you go have to stay or check wherever you're trying to go, because that just don't – because a lot of kids don't know that. This is not high school.
Yep.
That just don't automatically transfer. And then you might be starting over technically at another college and still be a freshman.
Exactly. Like,
you got to make sure when you're making these decisions, it's just not because your social life not going how you want it to, because – that don't matter no way, because these just your friends in college, or if you don't have no friends in college, when you get to where you're going, you can meet people. So that just non-transferable, like he said, I just think that should be illegal.
Yeah, and that's just the thing that kind of I'm gonna try not to get frustrated about it, because I still get mad to this day.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
The thing that made me upset the most was, I had graduated already. I had a degree in my hand.
I'm
not coming in like, hey, just take half my credits. I'm literally, the point that you guys say I'm supposed to be at, like, I had already at that point.
It's proof
that I've graduated. I walked across the stage, and then I just need, because typical engineering degree, they can say it's in 4 years. It's a 6-year program.
Yeah.
You're going to fail some classes. It's tough. If you're anybody who has to work and especially pay for yourself, it's a 6-year program.
Yeah.
So I already did my three and a half years. I had my first associate's degree. I'm at the middle point where I'm supposed to be, and like I said, they didn't want to take it. So I ended up just like researching Lawrence Tech. I knew it was expensive. I realized it was the best engineering school, blah, 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 blah. I went there. Lawrence Tech gave me tests, and I was testing out of stuff. They were like, You can start in the summer trimester if you want to.
Yeah,
right. You there?
Come on, yeah.
Come on with it. And then I met like a lot of the deans and stuff. Are teachers as well. They're former engineers that was either at Dow, Chrysler. One of my teachers, he actually one of the professors there, who's now he's associate dean. He actually had the patent for the voice that's in like subways and buses, you know.
Yeah.
Now arriving to Main Street.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That he made that back in like the '70s. He was an older guy. He made that back in the day, and he had partial credits for that.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff that he had throughout for patents. So really working professionals, and I didn't know that beforehand.
Yeah.
I didn't see or I didn't know about that in other colleges. I'm not saying it don't exist, but it existed across
the street.
So that's
since it's smaller too, you get to know this stuff because people take for granted all of the stuff we think regular. It just didn't used to exist.
Exactly.
And then it's like the guy who teaching you, like, wait a minute, you what made you
right?
Think
because
of
I was,
that?
I want to get back to you saying the patent. So that app that y'all created, like, what's going on with that? Like,
oh, no. So for anybody who listen to this that's doing anything for a college, don't let the college fund it, because if the college funds it, they own it.
Yeah.
Mm.
I know
that's heartbreaking.
I know you want to graduate, and I know you want to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But if you can figure out some other way to switch it to a utility patent so you can make something different, maybe when you go out, or self-fund it, or make sure that upfront you understand that it is yours, not
college.
University. But typically, most research and development in schools, if it's on school grounds, if it's being funded by the school facility, the school owns it.
Yeah.
Right.
You can get recognition, you get credits, you get all that stuff. Your name can be on it. You'll be associated with it. There'll be videos of you demonstrating it.
Yeah.
But as far as like the utility of it, making money from it, at the bottom line of it, you have to make sure that the school doesn't own it. A lot of things are created in universities by the hands of students.
Yeah.
Right.
It just is what it is.
It's the American way.
Exactly.
To me, it's the American way.
You work
way.
The land and we own it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's cool, man. But the experience taught.
Right. Plus, yeah, about to say.
Yeah. You know, I just want to know because that's what I'm saying. You never know. You never know. You could have been.
Follow up, because I was actually thinking that too. Because especially with college, it might be 4 or 5 people who work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Since your name get to be associated with it, it's like, no, we created that. Like,
And it can open up doors. Don't get me wrong. It can open up
that,
doors.
Yeah, for sure.
I actually had something that, you know, for instance, there was another team that did some work with back then it was the Xbox Kinect.
Yeah.
But they were basically working on a version of Face ID.
Yeah.
Back in that time, you know, it wasn't common, but they were using the Xbox Kinect. They deconstructed it. And it was using it for like locks on doors and stuff like that.
And one of them people probably the charge behind the Face ID stuff. You never know, exactly.
So I mean, it can. So having that associated with you, it can open up different circles, especially if you want to grow professionally.
Yeah.
Because you have done some work and created something, and that's the main thing in the engineering field. What did you do? What did you create? What did you make? Have you been associated with a project that made things, or are you just a paper pusher?
Right.
And then engineering really wasn't enough for you because you had the love for this media and entertainment.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, before that, though, you speak about your dad a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he's a big influence. Is he who taught you about finance?
Yeah. So, I mean, by him being an entrepreneur, you know, I would, when I was younger, being at the shop and stuff, I would have to do the books.
I would have to give
a simple breakdown. You know, I had to keep my own hours, right? I had to prove, you know, I had to punch the clock just like everybody else. I would answer the phone. I would do accounts receivable. I would charge people's cards like they would get a service done, and they would hand their card to a 10-year-old, and I'm back there running the card back there, typing it in, you know.
He said type it in the good old days.
Yeah, type it in the numbers, you know. Like, so I was definitely involved in the business. When things came up short, I was charged to go find out what transactions was missed, what didn't get charged, you know. Maybe something to get sales tax added onto it. I would have to understand the weekly numbers, what we're trying to do, what was the break even. All that stuff was just
second nature.
Yeah, you learned to buy association by being there. So I learned the technical, the wrenching side, but I also learned the business side. And then the third part of it that I learned was customer service, how to talk to people, how to deal with public relations, how to deal with irate customers.
Yeah. Which is normally a lot when you're in an industry like that, because nobody wants to have to go to the auto shop. So once they come through the door, they already in pissed off mode.
Yeah.
So you just got to soften that blow for them too. So exactly. You know what I'm saying?
And then your brothers, do they what do they do? Do they do anything with business or mechanic or mechanical?
Not mechanical per se. Well, in a different sense. So my brother my middle brother is an electrician by trade. So he does a lot with HV, 480 volt. He does a lot with info and security systems and things like that. And he has his own business. He actually have two.
Shout him out. Yeah.
My brother Jordan Anderson, man. Tank to you, 313. He is the guy. So he does two things. Number one, he is a certified NRA instructor.
Oh, okay.
So he teaches people about weaponry, how to train and things like that. And then he also, like I say, with electricians and things like that, he does a lot with that. My youngest brother, Jamal.
So I see this JA is a.
Yeah, for sure. It's all JA. My youngest brother, Jamal, him and his partner, they have a series of Airbnbs that they do as far as a business concern. And now they're moving into profitability.
Yeah.
They do a lot of setting their stuff up for people who travel for corporate.
Yeah.
So they have their bookings. They don't really focus on coming in for the weekend bookings. They book like the architect that's working on a project in
long
Houston
term.
That'll be there for 3-4 months. So they solidify their money that way.
That's dope. And y'all all came up in the same house, right?
Yeah, that's
just dope to hear. Like, that's being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm about to show y'all, and I'm going to sit back and see who's paying attention.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
My dad, my dad grew up on Wyoming and, Wyoming Schoolcraft area, still particularly, if you're familiar with the area, and it's not the best area, right, on the west side. But he was real versatile, and he provided a good example.
Yeah.
Some things he didn't do the best. Some things I think he did extraordinary well.
I mean, it sounds like he got three for three. You feel what I'm saying?
Well, my dad is like one of the nicest, coolest guys in the world, and it's just a wealth of knowledge. But I think he always prided himself in continuously learning and implemented that into us. So
yeah, that's dope. So now you get into, you always been the guy with the camcorder. No, who bought your first camcorder?
Actually, it was my dad's that I was sneaking out the house that I wasn't supposed to have.
So were you buying your own tapes?
I would buy my own tapes from, Blockbuster back in the day over there on Warren and Evergreen used to sell camcorder accessories. Like, they used to have a shelf, and it was a pack of 10 tapes that you can get for $10.
Yeah.
So that's what I used to get. And, I was taking his camera for like vacations and stuff. I was taking it to school,
recording niggas busting moves.
Yeah, basically. And then I had me and my cousin AC Aaron. We didn't know that we were cousins at the time when we were going to cast, but we found out later in life. We started a bootlegging business, and we were selling Dragon Ball Z tapes and anime and stuff. So it was like the technology behind like dubbing, and I got really entrenched in that.
You in anime?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, what a coincidence. We actually released an anime movie on Tubi, Animal Instinct, The Urban Jungle Animated. You should check it out. Yeah.
Okay,
you
know what. What type of, What was it, a more of action, fantasy? What is it?
It's actually both.
Okay,
it's
all right. Then I'm in.
So, because it's based on a book that I wrote, Animal Instinct, The Urban Jungle.
I'm familiar with the book,
So we turned the book into an internationally award-winning anime movie, and it's on Tubi. I want to say, like, we probably some of the only brothers that's putting anime cartoons on Tubi. Yeah. Absolutely.
Y'all were always into it when y'all were growing up?
Or? Definitely not. We didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, well, I ain't going to say we ain't know what it was, because you've seen Dragon Ball.
So
a lot of people, like, in your, like, I'm gonna say your age range, but we in the same age range, but it seemed like
the latter,
yeah, like the people turning 49, they was really big into anime. We just kind of was too early for the wave. And then the storylines be so, it's like wrestling with them storylines. Yeah. So it's like, wait a minute, I got to go back super far. But I mean, I think it's dope. I love when people get their own community and find, latch on to stuff that they like. And I just be thinking it's super dope. You know what I mean? Because some people just be against it. And it's like, why are you against it? Like, that's so crazy to me. Like, you never even checked it out. Like, I'm not opposed to watching anything.
I'm definitely going to some of them conventions and stuff like that. I'm going to start doing that because we in the business
now. You have it. And that's how almost like how you say you're in the business now. That's kind of almost how I got involved. Like, of course, you watch the normal stuff.
Yeah.
But I would go down to, so there was a booth down at Gibraltar Trade Center where a guy will be selling, like, import videos and things like that. So I would go tell him what I'm looking for. Somehow he had a connect over in Asia, whatever. I would get the tape and then I would start bootlegging them on stuff that you couldn't buy in the States. Some of them didn't even have subtitles in it. Like, they
straight
were,
up?
Yeah, they were just straight up just talking in Japanese. But
but it's the action.
Yeah, it's the action. So people wanted it. And then, you know, we had an inventory. We had a binder of all our inventory, what we had, what we sourced, and how many we had. And me and my cousin AC would just be pumping out bootleg anime, you know. Yeah. And then through that, right, because I was on the cameras, the recording, the dubbing and stuff, right, I started watching it. I was like, okay, yeah. I mean, you had your normal, like, Dragon Ball that came on. Everybody was familiar with that. But, like, you start discovering, like, other stuff that people
just underground raw shit.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, I did it. And, you know, I will say this. I made a lot of money off pushing hentai tapes to high school boys who wanted to see
that type of anime.
Yeah, you know.
I was gonna ask about that. Did you come across any of that?
It was one called Sailor and the Seven. What was it called? Sailor and the Seven Balls, and it was a parody of Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball, and a whole bunch of other animes, and a whole, like,
it was a medley of
life. Yeah, the whole crazy situation that might not be safe for work to listen to.
right.
Yeah. So then, when did you buy your first camera?
So my first camera would have been, geez, let me think back. It would have been a PowerShot. I think that's what they called it. Like a 2-3 megapixel digital camera, the kind you would get off a CVS wall and like the stiff plastic that just kind of hanging there.
Yeah.
That was the first one for me as far as a digital camera. I've always had film cameras.
Yeah.
I had an old Canon, I think it was my granddad's or something like that. But first digital camera was literally like the 1999 off the wall.
Let me grab this.
Let me grab it. See what it is, you know. DSLR would have been the T2 I got.
Yeah.
And I think I went like $600 on that one.
Yeah.
And it's just the tech behind it and how far camera technology has shifted.
Yeah.
I mean, people were still shooting on film, or you had a camera and you had a camcorder.
Yeah.
When technology started to converge the two between photography and video, that's when I really was like, okay, the T3, different cameras like that had the ability to record video and photo.
Yeah.
And you can, like, edit it on your computer. Yeah. You just didn't have to take the raw clip with the date in the bottom like a home movie. Like, you can make something with it. That's when
when the game changed for you.
Yeah, I like creating that way.
So what's your favorite camera to use now?
Me, I use I use Canon cameras particularly. I love the R6. That's just my favorite camera.
What you got?
Oh. I just got like
you don't love the camera.
A T6 or something like that. A Rebel T7, I think.
The T7i, great cameras, dude.
I had bought that for me and my daughter to take pictures. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I like taking pictures more than video, but I like to get into the video. And then my oldest daughter, I've been buying her camera since she about to be 13, she was 2 years old. That's the first thing I remember her asking for was like, it was just like this pink digital camera. Mm-hmm. So she been But you know, they kids, they I don't push nothing on the kids. I just see whatever you like, we can magnify it, but she wanna get more.
I tried to push basketball on Shelby. It just didn't work.
You can't push nothing.
You can't push, yeah.
Because you a father also, right?
No, he's not. Yeah, he married though.
Oh, you married.
Yeah, married.
How married life treating you?
Married life is great, man. It's always gonna be tough, but I mean, we are celebrating 11 years married.
Yeah, that's dope.
Next year. This year, we're celebrating 11 years. You got to remember, man, COVID screwed up everybody's time. It took a few years.
It still tripped me out that it's like 2024. It just seemed like
something missing.
I was talking about that the other day with my wife.
Like, damn, like that was 4 years ago. It seemed like it's really like 2020 now.
Yeah,
it's just something ain't right.
It didn't shift. Like life just stopped. So you got to add in those couple years. I've been married for 11 years. Shout out to my wife, man. I love married life. Like I say, the best lesson I've learned to as being a husband with being married this long is that seeing the transformation of each of us turning into different people.
Yeah, because I don't think people understand that that's really go happen.
Yes.
If you marry your wife because she's super fine and she thick and all of that, then y'all have a baby, she probably gonna get fat, dog. Mm-hmm. You gotta be ready for that. Like, people don't think people grow or change or whatever. And that's all it is. It's constantly changing. You know, in my marriage, what I have to have though, I have to have two bathrooms.
Okay.
I gotta have two bathrooms.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Because if you marry and you don't got two bathrooms, that's going to be tough, because when y'all get into it and both of y'all got to use the bathroom, somebody going to know that they stand in the bathroom just because they know you got to use it.
Yeah.
Because shit get petty like that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The best advice I could give to somebody getting married, man, is make sure you live somewhere where there's two bathrooms, man. Yeah. That'll solve a lot of problems. Yeah, and it sounds crazy, but...
It really don't sound crazy, though.
Yeah. To somebody who's not married, they might not be understanding of that right now, but... Too bad.
Watching the growth in your partner. I mean, no, I don't even say partner. Watching the growth in your spouse,
mm-hmm.
right? So in our case, it's wise. I think that's tremendous too, right?
Yeah.
Because I make sure I've been married 17 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I just make sure, like, what do you want to do for you? Like, if I didn't exist, what would you want to do?
Right, yeah.
Now? Like, and then that's what I want to help you do. Like, I don't know too many people who actually living out what they said they want to do as a kid. But my wife is one of them, though. Because I was like, you know, we got kids and stuff. Like, what you want to be when you grow up? And my wife's like, I always wanted to be a teacher. So I said, well, what's the next step? I should get my master's. Get it. Right, get your master's, get your doctorate, like mm-hmm. all of that, because
you're special. You would want to be a teacher anyway.
You know what I mean? If I didn't exist, you would want to do that. I'm just here to make sure you do that.
And what did you want to be when you was a kid?
Man, I always wanted to be in some type of, like, now that I look at it, it was gonna be some type of teaching or coaching, okay. Right? So with being a coach, that's enough for me, because when you're a teacher, like, you still conform to what the school can't go out of certain parameters when mm-hmm. teaching the kids, because even with history, you could teach. I feel like
I can't even lie to y'all,
or do I got to teach this history in this book? Yeah. Because if I can teach history, you could pull from all type of points in history, this, because it's really just repeating itself. But you can't make me be like,
yeah, besides an international criminal, I really want to be a firefighter, dog.
Like, you brave. I just thought that the other day. Like, firefighters really.
I really want to be a firefighter. Like, bro. I don't even know why, dog. I think it's just because they help people. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they really help people.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If the fire, like, so I always, because I'm a person of service, you know what I'm saying? So, but it really was an international criminal first, but like a strong number two was a firefighter. You know what I'm saying? Because I be thinking sometimes, like, man, can I go do that now? Like, because I'm in the best shape of my life. I feel, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, damn, can I really go be a firefighter? Is it too late? Like,
nah, it's never too late.
Yeah, but like, I wanted to be a firefighter, man. Because
that's dope. So y'all are y'all planning on having children? Do you want children? Because the way you speak about your father, it's just like you feel like
it's so I'll just say it like this, if God see it, it happens.
If he see fit.
I did have a stint of being a foster during COVID with my nephew.
Yeah.
And one thing that both me and my wife will agree upon is that getting the state involved in your personal life, especially when you people like us who's fairly reserved, conservative, we didn't want to go through that process. So yeah. He was with us for a few years during COVID. And it's like, yeah, we're going to take a little bit of the break.
Yeah, he put that on point. He timed that out for y'all.
Yeah, right? Like it's like parenting on steroids because everything that you know.
Is micromanaged by something that don't got to do with how parenting really go.
Exactly. So when you throw that on there, then you're trying to also, be the person that needs to be in that kid's life. It turns
into it's like a set of rules that I don't even want to follow because this ain't real. Whoever wrote these rules, because parenting is a play-by-play sport like that. That's specifically tailored to whoever your parent. You can't even parent your two kids the same way. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
And they want it strict,
man. They act like they don't understand the human experience. Like whatever's on this paper telling me this is what I should be doing, that's not real. And you know that's not real because you a person. So you know that what works for person A is the farthest thing that could work from person B. You know what I'm saying?
Have you shot any films with being heavily involved with the photography and the filming things? Have you shot any films for anyone yet?
Like professional films?
Yeah.
No, just shorts and things like that. No formal movies. And yeah. I know the projects that Jay was telling me about that you guys are actually have on the table. So.
Yeah.
He said, I got to come in and help him because it's a lot that he's going to have to do.
Yeah.
But no formal film credits and things like that. I went to a few sets of some of the local stuff in Detroit to help out when like different videographers and things like that needed something. But no formal credits.
Is that something you want to get into?
Yeah, absolutely. I think through the Carter Media Productions, I think that's probably going to be the first stint when we actually make some real movies and things like that.
That's dope. Yeah. That's dope.
A lot of content that I've shot has been, I did some story content, short form content, personal content, business content, of course, for people. Obviously, event coverage and stuff like that, which is where you see me at a lot with you guys' stuff. That's pretty much been the bag of trying to get, I guess, from the self-serving part of it. I want to see, like you guys probably seen some of the clips that I made from the last event we had that Jason sent over to you. My goal is I want everybody who has, like, maybe a smaller event to look aesthetically pleasing, like it was shot like a large event. So
you in control of that. It could be 10 people in here, and I can make it look like it was 100 people in here.
Exactly. Yeah. The way it looks, the way it's enunciated, the points you take, the crispiness, all that stuff is always taken into account of. And I think that's what the goal was of it. So I never formally pursued, like, hey, I want to, put my bid in to shoot this for, like, a formal film. And I want to, selfishly, I want to work and help out the people that I know with inside of my circle, too.
I prefer that, too, because it's like, it's just so, I like organic feels. Mm-hmm. And what that mean is, like, why would I go hire somebody else when I know James, he's shot with us before. It's easy for us to explain to you what we want, because it's like, we want to, and somebody else who don't know how we move around during the events and stuff like that, they just, it wouldn't be the same feel, because I believe wholeheartedly, like, the cameraman has to be in sync with whatever.
The cameraman is the most important person in there with the talent.
Right. Because if you don't know, say you were shooting something for an artist and it's just them coming in here. If you don't know them, you don't know how they should look walking in the door, but it's like, man, I done shot for dude for 300 hours. Hey, you should be coming in like this. You know how we do. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So tell people where they can contact you and see some of your work, or just if they want to follow you and reach out.
So
be a part of your journey.
So begreatmedia.com, video portfolios there. You can see some of the past work that people have allowed me to post that, are okay with it being on the internet.
Yeah.
Everything is not there online just because people like their privacy on some of the projects I worked on. And then if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's just jda.jpg, JPG. So reach out, DM, whatever you're looking for. I do kind of keep the transparent rates out there on the website as far as if anybody's looking for any type of video service, video creative services and things like that. But I do one thing that I try to make sure that I'm clear on, is that I do what's called a discovery session.
Okay.
So before we even say, yeah, I'm going to shoot that, we got to sit down and talk, have a discovery session, make sure I meet your needs, make sure that we can work together and that I can provide the value that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Sometimes people reach out, and for example, you know, I have people reached out to want to, you know, shoot music videos. I'm just not comfortable with somebody pointing a gun at me and the camera.
That's
just
not me. I don't care if you say ain't nothing in it or not.
Yeah, yeah. That's a no for me, dog. Yeah.
Especially for somebody who's pro 2A, who carries a, you know, his firearm everywhere. I might have a reaction.
Right, yeah, especially for somebody who brother is an NRA representative and teaches the classes. Yeah, might be quick on the drum, my baby. You might fuck around and find out for real.
So I'm just not into that. But, you know, my goal is, okay, how can I be great telling your story?
Yeah.
A lot of videographers, a lot of photographers, they get real arrogant. And I think they take the service that they're providing to the individuals is to tell their story. They're most important, right? What their vision is how you need to work and
to just to present it, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes videographers and photographers, they get a little cocky because the work would be dope, and it's like, it's my work, you know, it's this and third. Yeah, it is technically your work.
They reached out
it's
to
our
you.
Our work.
And a lot of videographers and photographers get the big hit because people reaching out to them, and it's like, I'm only gonna be good if I could tell your story. That's actually how my next job will come, if I tell your story. Yeah, right. Right. Because it don't, you go tell them who did it.
And videography and photography, it's its own art form, if you treat it as such. So if I'm a rapper, I have to enjoy your art, so because I believe in your vision. So I'm like, oh, that's who need to do this, because I enjoy looking at their art and what they put out, man. If people want to contact you, bro, how could they contact
you? No, you know what? Just go to the YouTube, type in the Connected Experience Podcast visuals. I think we up to about 1,500 subscribers.
The Esham episode going crazy.
It's going crazy for us. I don't know what it's doing. Because we don't compare ourselves to nobody else.
Yeah, but
this is like, the one that's getting the a
lot of traction,
a lot of traffic. So that was good for us. But just check us out on YouTube.
Yeah, or everythingshelby.com. You go to everythingshelby.com. You can join my daughter's book club. She got her merch on there. She got her books on there. Once I'm done writing this book that I'm writing for somebody else, because I've been commissioned to write another project, once I'm done with that, we go jump on our joint. You know what I'm saying? Her new one that she wants to, you know, she being way more vocal. You know, she want her own computer to write. You know what I'm saying? But I'm just not comfortable with that yet, like not yet, you know what I'm saying? Because
how you gonna stifle her progress?
She could buy it herself, then she got her own money.
She's telling you that so you can take her. She ain't she I want this one, you gotta take her.
I don't know her, like I'm just
you
waiting
on her budget.
I'm just I might get her that just for something, just you know what I'm saying? But she want to start writing on her own computer, you know what I'm saying? Because I bought her a computer before and she ain't used that joint, that's why. So I'm looking at you like,
go use that
one. Go use that one. You know what I'm saying? That joint's still going. I'm Santwan.
I'm Antoine.
I want for my brother what I want for myself.